We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Let's get to it, man. We go to the North Owen State Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. John, man, any thoughts on the cheek gate?
The cheat gate. That's what it's being called.
Cheat gate
is Beckham Jr.
Yeah, cheat. Well, we got Tristan Thompson up here. Tristan Thompson up here getting ejected too for the Grizzlies. It's getting bad now. I tell him, just lay off, man. Lay off, man. Just say no.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened to Tristan Thompson. I don't really watch basketball, but I know with OBJ, like, I thought it was kind of ridiculous in terms of the video I saw of what happened in the locker room. Like, it really doesn't make much sense. So
come on, man. Come on. I'm like, listen.
Non-story.
Like, come on, man. I'm like, yo. In that case, I've been in jail weeks ago, years ago. I'm like, yo, it's over. Please do not dig up any footage from 2000 to 2005 at Ohio University. Please. I'm just waiting to put out a statement. You know what? I apologize for anything that has come up during my time at Ohio University. But, you know, one of the things that I won't apologize for is my wondering of what, or guessing what happened with the hiring, and second guessing kind of what happened with, you know, the Browns coaching search. It looked like, you know, they had their sights on Josh McDaniels. Didn't quite work. Kevin Stefanski was brought in. And it brings up this very interesting topic. And it was so crazy because, obviously, you working and doing what you do for a profession, it brings up a great opportunity to talk to you about this yin and yang and this mythical world of analytics. Kevin Stefanski, obviously a guy who was brought on because they're aligned in this world, speaking along the lines of analytics and what John DePodesta wants to do and what Jimmy and Dee Haslam want to do. And then pretty much, I'm guessing one of the main candidates coming back is Andrew Berry, being one of those guys who coming back to the organization. But you working for Pro Football Focus, what is your insight as to what the role analytics plays today, kind of the rise of analytics in professional football, and kind of what is the role specifically of analytics in football today?
Yeah, so I think, like, you know, if anybody that's played football in their lives, you talk about analytics seems to be like just a new term for what we used to do when we played football in high school and in college, where, you know, I remember when I played at University of Kansas, and we, as a defensive game plan, and the coaches would tell us, hey, you know, this team, we're playing, they on second downs after a run, they love to run slants. They run slants, like, you know, whatever percentage of the time. So when we get into a second down after a run, we're going to call a defense to stop slants because that's what they like to run. And then also we know that off of slants, they can hit a slant and go, or, you know, a sluggo. And so we'd make sure to have the safety help behind to be able to cut those off as well. So, like that's something that's been done throughout football history for, you know, since I remember, and definitely was done before I was even alive. And I think what it is now is that the more you know, advanced the technology gets, the more data that we can get based on just people charting games, like what we do at Pro Football Focus at PFF, is because we have more of this information, so there's just more of it out there, and you need people that can decipher that information at a higher rate, that way the coaches can get it. So it's essentially taking this information that you can get on the field and applying it to your game plan of what you can call in certain situations, and then you can even break it down even further. You know, if you're looking at, hey, does this team like to run it or pass it more on first downs, or what type of runs and passes? Do they like to run on first downs and then on second downs? And then when they get into this third and short or third and medium area, what are the typical types of plays they like to call? I mean, that's what, in my opinion, that's what analytics are. And then you can just go into it further about what specifically they're doing. And then you can take it to all aspects of the organization. You know, you look at the NFL draft, for an example, for just selecting players, obviously you have to be able to scout these players and know what translates to the next level. But you can use the data that you get from the combine and their statistics in college of how to narrow down, hey, you know, when if they have, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, there's only a 5% likelihood of this guy succeeding at the next level. So you obviously you want to typically type to avoid those types of guys, whereas, like, you know, if he has, you know, the right markers for these certain statistics and metrics in the at the combine, then he's going to be, you know, I'm going to say he's a 50% chance. You know, there's probably not no player is probably that high in any number, but it's just an example. So it's just taking this information, and there's just a lot more of it now, and being able to figure out how to utilize it. And that's, in my opinion, that's what analytics are nowadays. It's something that's been done throughout the history of the NFL. It's just you're just able to decipher this data a lot more quickly with people with, you know, analytics backgrounds and math backgrounds.
You know, one of the things, and talking to John Costco in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, one of the things that, you know, there's this, I guess there's a little bit of confusion, and there's some kind of times there's a little pushback between coaches and traditional guys who, you know, and like you said, when you know, us playing football or playing football in college, obviously you're going into film rooms and you have a scouting report and you're doing, you get the film and you're breaking that down. Usually the graduate assistants bring that in. You get the film. You have an opportunity to even get that on a Monday. You get that on Monday, you break that down, and then you're watching film on your own individually throughout the week. They'll give you the cut-ups of the inside runs or the pass plays or the outside runs or whatever they're traditionally, whatever team they do, whether you're an offense or the defense or whatever specific skill set or position group you're in. One of the things that, you know, for guys like football guys who played football, whether you're in high school or college, or even if you're lucky enough to play in a professional in professional football, wherever you're at, they understand that. But for the general fan, sometimes they don't quite understand that there may be some sort of friction between a traditional football coach and a front office. Where would you think that some friction could come from a traditional football coach and a front office who is really aligned with say analytics, and where could that come in the process of coming together?
Yeah, I think where the friction would happen is that if the two individuals are forced together, you look at the Browns for a great example of this, that have obviously had switching through head coaches and general managers for several years now. It's never been a marriage between the GM, the front office, and the head coach. It's always one or the other that comes in first, and then the other one getting forced upon to have that other individual. A great example of that is John Dorsey and Hugh Jackson. You know, John Dorsey didn't come in with Hugh Jackson at the same time. And so John Dorsey was forced to have this head coach for a year that wasn't his choice, right? Or when Hugh Jackson was hired, you know, with Sashi Brown, that was after the fact, we learned that the front office actually wanted, I think it was Sean McDermott at the time and not Hugh Jackson. So that was kind of forced together. And so when you have a forced marriage from the start, it causes that friction because they have obviously going to have different philosophies on building a roster and what types of players to bring in and, you know, how you want to run practices and whatnot. You know, you look at the best teams in NFL history, Bill Walsh, for an example. He basically was able to pick his players and he ran his system and he would be able to get those types of players that ran his system. Example nowadays is Bill Belichick. He's essentially the GM. He has a guy that he brought, you know, brings in from the organization, from the you know, the ground up or brings in from the outside that, hey, this is, these are the types of players that I want to bring in. So you have to have a shared vision like they, like the Cleveland Browns, you know, the owners and coaches and all, you know, the Paul DePodesta, they all talk about having this aligned vision. And it's essentially being able to have people together that think the same or think similarly. Nobody's going to think the same, but just to have a shared vision of, hey, this is how we want to build our team. And it's easier to do that when you have the bring in the coach first rather than having the GM like with when they did with Sashi Brown and then bringing in Hugh Jackson, because they built this vision and then they're forcing a coach to kind of conform to that vision, even though that, like, an NFL coach, you know, there's only 32 of these jobs. And if you're getting offered this job from a team, you're going to say a lot of things that to try to get that job of wanting to make sure that you're aligned, you're appearing to be aligned in the vision of the team, even if you don't agree with that. And I think we saw that, you know, play out with the Cleveland Browns. But I mean, it's difficult to say what, you know, why there's friction with, you know, a front office and a head coach and a coaching staff. But I think that starts with it, is that you're forcing a marriage together rather than letting it happen organically.
Do you see from a perspective of where you can look and say, at least when I see Dorsey, there's a thought of, I know that guy can pick football players, right? I know, like, you miss on some guys and you miss more than sometimes you hit, but I know he can pick football players. When you look at the new organization, and whether it's analytics or whether with who they are, there's a guy who I say, all right, well, who do I hang my hat on and say, I know for a fact that this guy is going to bring in the next so-and-so. That guy, DePodesta, can pick football players, or Andrew Berry can pick football players. Who do you have an issue with saying, all right, well, do we have a football guy now?
So I would say that, you know, as good of a talent evaluator at John Dorsey is, he's still not like that much, maybe not that much better than the average GM at being able to pick players. You look at his drafts in Kansas City. Yeah, you look at, hey, all the hits of Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, who was a big time risk because of, you know, his issues that he had in college. Obviously, he was able to get Patrick Mahomes, but like, you look at those drafts and it was basically one hit a year. And even with the Browns, yeah, he had two seasons here and he was able to acquire some talent and whatnot. But when it comes to being a GM, you're going to be missing on a lot more picks than you actually hit on. And so when it comes to the draft and picking these players, you have to realize, you have to have the wherewithal that, hey, I'm going to miss on players and I don't know more than, you know, GM at, you know, in Philadelphia or in Carolina or whatnot, because those guys hit on players too. And they get talented players. And also you have to realize that players can, even if you hit on the next Andrew Luck retired early, because of injuries. And so you have to bring into this factor that, hey, there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the NFL draft. And so when you build a team versus just acquiring talent, you also have to have the mindset of, you know, how does this individual fit in with the culture that we're trying to establish? And so when John Dorsey was bringing in guys like Antonio Callaway, who now is off the team because of all of his off-field issues, that's a big red flag. And when you're playing guys like him over a Rashard Higgins, who by all accounts has done nothing but everything right, it brings in, obviously it creates a culture that's not good. So building a team is much more than just acquiring talent. And it's also recognizing that you're going to miss on players. And so one of the things that like an analytics front office will have, like the Browns, is that they're going to acquire more draft assets to have more, you know, swings at the plate, essentially, because they understand that they're not going to hit on every single pick. And we look at the past two drafts, we still really don't know if any of these players will pan out, except for probably Nick Chubb. But Nick Chubb is at a position where you can find guys off the street and do 80% of what he's doing. And it's still, you know, he was as good as he was this year. The Browns still had a ton of issues because they couldn't pass the ball. But I think it's having the, you know, having an egoless and having a way of looking at acquiring talent and building a team rather than having, hey, I'm better than all these other people at picking teams. I'm going to bring in this talent and it's going to work. So that's the difference, I think, between the two approaches. And so it doesn't bother me that maybe, you know, they're going to bring in a football guy for the GM, whether it's George Payton or even Andrew Berry, who is a, you know, he's been a football guy his whole life. And maybe he just thinks it has a higher understanding of the analytical side of it. So it's, you know, I have no concerns about how they're going to, you know, the GM that they're going to bring in.
All right, talking to Josh Costco on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Last question. There is, you know, it's so crazy. We talk about the whole Odell Beckham Jr. thing. People in Cleveland, you know, I've been going back and forth with them on Twitter a lot. And I, you know, I look at Odell Beckham Jr.'s, you know, situation. And people say, you know, G. Bush's production is just, it's not worth the antics. I guess they don't like his cleats or his visors or something. And, you know, I look at his production as far as his yards per game. I said, I guess the third or fourth leading receiver in yardage during the year is only like 167 yards more than Odell Beckham had. I think he's 23rd in yards at 1,035 this year. But from your perspective, I mean, you break it down. You watch the film. You guys give out grades. You guys do this. I mean, is Odell Beckham garbage or something now? I just want to get your perspective on it because it's the perspective is that he's not good anymore. He's damaged goods, and we should probably just trade him for like a second-round pick because he's not worth it somehow. I'm really confused. Maybe you can give me your thoughts.
Right, so he's coming off the worst season of his career and still had, you know, 1,035 yards, 14 yards for reception, and you know, it's nothing on the team last year really worked except for Nick Chubb, and actually the what's a benefit of having, you know, Kevin Stefanski come in now is that he runs a wide zone team, and Nick Chubb's best runs were on wide zone, so that at least matches with what the Browns can do. But in terms of the passing game, literally nothing worked very well. But see, he still was able to get over 1,000 yards. And yes, that's because he gets a lot of targets. And also we know that he was injured for the entire season. Odell Beckham Jr. still had, you know, every other season of his career outside of 2017 when he was injured for pretty much, I think it was 12 games that year. He's been phenomenal. So it's not like he's some scrub off the street. When he's healthy, he's a top five talent at the wide receiver position. So if he can get back to just being healthy in himself from, you know, his time in New York, he's a top five wide receiver easily and one of the best in the NFL and one of the most valuable non-quarterbacks in the NFL.
All right. Well, I just take it from the guy that does Pro Football Focus rankings. I just may be me. I just wanted to just put that out there. So, all right, man. Thank you, John. I appreciate you calling. And maybe next week we can actually talk about who won the NFC championships and AFC championships.
Yes, yes. My predictions are the 49ers and Chiefs are going to be in the Super Bowl. So,
all right.
That's where I'm at.
That should be a good deal, man. I appreciate you. We'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good, Garrett. Have a good one.
Have a good one, man. I appreciate it. John Costco, Pro Football Focus on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.